Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Study and save this summer with Waubonsie Community College. Earn the same credit as a four-year school at a fraction of the cost. Choose from a variety of popular transferable courses, such as psychology, communications, art, biology, and economics, with many online and hybrid options. So study and save this summer at Waubonsie. Most classes start June 12. Learn more at waubonsie.edu/summer. That's waubonsie.edu/summer.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis, and it has been more than a week. Now, as I've said before, there's nothing worse than a podcast host apologizing for missing time, apologizing for lousy audio, but I got to do it. Sorry. Because I was promising you two a week, right? Pretty big promise. Kept it up for a while. No way that's going to happen. Doing another show about obstacle racing that you guys know about and a lot going on in that world right now. So I don't know who I was kidding. There's no way I can do two these week. So my promise is to bring you one, and my promise is to get you Tuesdays, which I'm not doing this week because it's Thursday. But hey, that's all I'm going to say about that. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging in there with me. One of the ways you can support me, by the way, for those of you who listen to this podcast, we're going to have a Patreon. We currently have only had a couple of sponsors, as you've noticed, and we're going to keep trying to do that. But in the meantime, I know that Patreon is a great way. People are like, God, I like this guy. Let me give him a couple bucks a month, right? Why not? A couple bucks adds up in time, and it really helps do this thing more. Okay. I also want to say, as I'm recording this, here on the morning of April 5th, it is my birthday. Now, those of you that listened to the DDP episode, Diamond Dallas Page, know that it's also his birthday, and it turns out another wrestler, Charlotte Flair's birthday. How cool is that? Also, Betty Davis, I remember that as a kid, because it used to be, you didn't know that many, like, there wasn't that. I'm sure now if you go to Wikipedia, famous people born on this day, they probably list a gazillion, many that have been born after me, but back when I looked at the newspaper when I was a young man, there wasn't, you know, whatever stars of today or young people born, you know, weren't born yet. And there was like three people listed, like an old president maybe, and Betty Davis. So there you go. It's my birthday. Happy birthday to me. You want to shoot me a note when you hear this? Great. Whether it's today or later on down the line, or maybe it's a year from now. Maybe a year from now you find this episode. Who the fuck knows? It's the magic of podcasting. On today's program, Phantom Troublemaker. Now, I met this gentleman, whose name is also Dave, at Dragon Con, and instantly liked him. I think we get into it, but basically, so by the way, this tells you how old this episode is. And by the way, there's nothing personal against this guest, or any guest, by the way, who takes a long time for me to get to. As you know, I was doing 3-4 interviews a week for a really long time. And that puts a lot on the hopper. It's good news for you, lots of content, but bad news for people who take it personally that I didn't get to their episode. But doesn't mean I don't like you. It's just how it goes. I have no sort of rhyme or reason for putting these, other than something seems timely, it gets up faster. Again, I'm not going to get into that. So I like this guy right away. I went up to him at Dragon Con. He was wearing a lucha mask, and he seemed like a cool dude. And then we started talking, and he's got a great voice. One of the best voice ever. So he's in the right business. He does podcasting. He does some hosting, some panel hosting and some other stuff. And you'll hear all about that on the show. But a really cool dude. And I've wanted to get together with him since, especially because he's deep, deep, deep into nerddom and pop culture. And I'm only a little bit. And so I have questions about things. And he's the kind of guy I would reach out to talk about those kind of things. Also, Dustin Duro, for those of you that know Dustin. But Dustin, I was supposed to have back on the other show a while ago, and it hasn't happened. Anyhow, let's get into it. Troublemaker and I, right here, here in the Alkaloid front porch, many months ago. If you want to see what actual was, go to the show notes. Away we go.
Dragon Con this past weekend, for the first time, I moderated guest panels. I did one with Kane and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
So jealous.
One with just
Kane. I should have gone to
Kane. That. Yeah, they were great. Those guys are awesome.
And you got that because you just know Curran a long time? Not Curran. What's his name? Carroll. Dan Carroll.
No, actually, I mean, we can go into the how I got to where I am at Dragon Con if you want to do that.
Sure.
Okay.
Do you know what's her name? Sorry, the wife of the
guy. Do know what's her name. No, I don't know which what's her name.
Well,
I know a few.
So I went into Dragon Con very blind, and we can get into that. I just emailed, first of all, the Dragon Con website was less exciting than I thought it would be. The app is pretty good.
Yeah.
The website is like, I don't want to say 97, but maybe 07.
Well, what's funny about the website is up until 2, maybe 3 years ago, it was super like 92. And then they updated it just a couple of years ago to be what it is now.
Which is hilarious considering...
considering
it's... Hashtag it's, nerds.
Right, exactly. Like, you would think that you would have, like, the top-notch crew ready to jump on that. But for some reason, the site, you know, it is what it is. Like, you have to get in there and sort of figure it out.
Right. But the app is quite... 2017.
The app is mind-blowing.
And you would think that a mobile process is more difficult because it's, I don't know.
Here's my theory. Here's my theory is that they got the website to sort of the what it needed, well, what they had to have up, and we're like, look, we're going to have an app. Everybody's going to be using the app now.
So
let's focus on that.
Right. But that's a bad idea, though. The app is great for at the con.
Yeah.
I'm still very much a desktop is where I'm going to order my tickets, find my information.
Right.
Those younger than me might not. Like, I rarely even send an email through my phone. I just tell everybody, like if someone's texting me some questions, like, hey, stop. Send me an email. That's my to-do list.
Yeah.
When I get to the laptop, I can focus. That's for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm 45, right? And I know, anyway, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're saying.
We won't go through how you got to the con. Let's just start with... Where did you grow up? That's always a good place to start.
First 5 years of my life were in Gastonia, North Carolina.
Okay.
And most of my family is up there in Wilmington. But then, this is my little joke, my parents moved down here when I was 5. My dad got transferred with his job. And they, 10 years ago, went back to North Carolina. So they brought me down here to Atlanta and left me.
Left like a baby?
No.
Like on somebody's porch?
Yeah, well, basically, they brought me to Atlanta, the greatest city in the Southeast, and said, good luck, son. Now, granted, I was 29 when they did that, but it was still devastating.
You're not over it yet.
No, I'm still hanging
on. What were you doing for work at 29?
At 29, I had, let's see... I had just started the job that I'm in now, the money job. Now, I've got to make a distinction here.
Right.
I have a money job. The money job I go to, and it pays my bills and supports my family.
Right. We call that the A job.
Yeah, that's the A job. But that's not my career. My career is finding anywhere I can go, like right here, and grab a microphone and put it in front of my face and talk into it. My career.
We'll probably get along. Did you know that's what you always wanted?
Yeah, and I didn't realize it until recently, but I have always known I wanted to entertain in some way. Very early on, I discovered David Letterman. He was one of the big influences on me. But, you know, game shows were also a big thing, which I host a game show at Dragon Con now, which is kind of like a dream come true.
Right.
So stuff
who
like
are your Who are your game show hosts?
Bob Barker,
of course,
is the man. Later on, you had stuff like Remote Control. And then on Nickelodeon,
are you old enough to know Remote Control?
I'm 41.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you actually look younger than that. That's what people say to me.
Yeah.
Tell people, I'm sure many of our fans do not know Remote Control, because I don't think there's been any kind of, a lot of times there's like rehashings on Comedy Central or whatever. I don't think Remote Control has made that circuit yet.
Well, the problem with Remote Control, or first of all, Remote Control started in 1987, 30 years ago.
Jesus.
You're right. I know. And it was on MTV, and it was part of their, you know, MTV first started off, it was all music videos.
Right.
And then they started doing programming because they wanted to keep eyes on the channel for longer than 3 minutes at a time.
Right.
And Remote Control was some of their initial programming, and it was hosted by a guy named Ken Ober. And it was...
And co-hosted by?
Well, I can't remember the original co-host name, but Kari Wuhrer is the one that came in the second season. And
but the other co-host is now a lot more famous.
Well, there's Colin Quinn, who is known as, well, known by comedians as one of the greatest stand-ups of all time.
Absolutely.
But you also had Adam Sandler and Dennis Leary. And
well, they were doing bits.
They were doing little side bits. That's where we met these people.
And let's stop for a moment, though.
Sure, sure.
Because you just reminded me. So once upon a time... This topic seems to come up a lot on this podcast, I guess because I've been talking to a lot of guys around my age, but once upon a time, you could not find free porn everywhere.
Oh, right.
So when the hottest redhead on TV appeared in Maxim, and you might get to see her in her underwear, you're talking about 10 on the 10 scale.
Yeah, and Kari Wuhrer was the queen of that.
Every 15-year-old boy's freaking... dream. I almost said, let's look where she is now. I don't want to know. Don't tell me if you know. I'm afraid she's gotten plastic surgery and doesn't look hot anymore. But
doesn't that happen a lot? They get that plate face.
But here's
like a plate.
Can we talk about this for a minute?
Sure.
Everybody knows that, right? It's not a mystery.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, hey, that woman looks like she's had plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Nobody looks younger.
Why do they go ahead and do it anyway?
Like, the only time I've seen it work is recently when it fits the character. So I watched that Big Little Lies, Pretty Little Lies.
Don't know.
It's on, not probably in your wheelhouse per se, if I'm stereotyping you.
No, that's fine. Go right ahead.
But you should watch it.
Sure.
But it's a cool drama, and it's all women-centric. And what's her name? Tom Cruise's old wife, Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
She's in it. It's all basically 45-year-old moms.
Okay.
But her character looks like she would have had plastic surgery, so it worked. Freakish lips, and was this area above your lips called? Between the nose and the lips?
Yeah, I don't know. That's got a name, but I can't think of it right
Anyhow,
now.
Anyhow, let's we're going to end up talking for 6 hours. I can feel it already.
Yeah.
So we should try to keep this somewhat.
That's fine. We can order out.
Can we?
There are lots of restaurants around here.
There's a lot of good restaurants. But anyhow, so... But that is a bonus. The gorgeous girl, that's a bonus. But talk again a little bit more about the content of what Remote Control was as a game show.
Well, see, I loved the idea of people just doing dumb pop culture competitions, and that's what it was. You would have various references, and people would. It was part quiz show. It didn't get into the physical stuff like Double Dare, which is another big component of what's inspired me. But it was
isn't that a Ken Ober produced show? Didn't he go on to become like the big producer?
I'm honestly not too sure. But I just know there was this amazing, in the late 80s, there was this amazing evolution of what game shows were. They weren't just a guy with a skinny mic asking housewives questions. Like, things changed and they became geared towards our generation.
I got to say, though, I do have an affinity for the classics. I have fond memories of watching Monty Hall with my grandmother, right?
Yeah.
When you say Skinny Mike, I immediately think of the king of the Skinny Mike, which was Match Game.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think now they're redoing with Alec Baldwin. But the old Match Game, I forget his name. He was great. What else did I watch? Like the original Wheel of Fortune. Like, there was a lot of Joker's. See, Joker's Wild.
Mine were mostly like the 80s daytime, like the Wheel, and later on Jeopardy. Because when you're a kid, you know, Jeopardy's not
way too
interesting,
hard.
Right?
Way too hard.
I can't deal with that. There was it Press Your Luck? No whammies.
No whammies.
No whammies.
Right.
I loved that just because the little cartoon guys. Like, the game itself wasn't that great.
No.
But you get the whammies, and you're like, as a kid, you're like, no, give me the whammies. I want to see those little guys cavorting about the screen.
Right. So you saw those guys and was like, wow, if I could do that.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I don't know if that idea totally got into my head. At the time, I just wanted to be on the show. Like, everybody our age dreamed of being a contestant on Remote Control.
Of course.
That was the dream at the time. But there was definitely the seed of... I want to entertain. I want to talk into a microphone in some way. And my parents are both very, very straightforward people. My dad was a businessman who wore suits to work every day. My mom was a housewife later on, taught preschool. Very, very, you go to college and you learn how to do something that involves writing in a book or typing in a computer. And you sit at a desk and you earn money for your family. And that was it. Like, there were no other options.
I'm nodding in a very, like, that's what I grew up with.
There was no, sure, you can draw or paint or sculpt or get up on a stage or, you know, any number of things. It was that you will learn a business and do that business for your life.
So did you go to college?
I went for a little while, found it wasn't for me. I did the community college thing, and it was basically like 13th grade of high school.
Right.
And if I'd had a little more drive and a little more confidence, I think I could have made, I still wouldn't have stayed in college, but I would have made different decisions about what I did at that point. And there will be, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit of, oh, I wish I'd done this when I was, you know, in my 20s. But I will say up front, I'm very happy with where I am right now. My life is as good as it's ever been. So I can't honestly say I would change anything that I've done, because if it would lead me to be somewhere other than where I am right now, I wouldn't do it.
Did you always have a really awesome radio voice?
Yes. Ever since, it was funny, when I was younger, probably like 13, 14, like right when the voice started sort of changing and becoming the man voice.
Right.
I would call my friends up like, hey, can Wayne hang out? And like later on, Wayne and I'd be hanging out, and he'd be like, yeah, my mom always thinks it's weird when you call. She's like, why are you hanging out with some man?
And where were you living in Atlanta at the time? Like, what city?
We're out in the suburbs. Grew up in Norcross, okay. Mostly, and very, very suburban.
Which high school?
Norcross High School.
Okay.
The old... Well, there have been a two or three at this point. This is the old Norcross High School that was one of the first schools to introduce the metal detector the year before I graduated. Very exciting.
And you guys were the fighting what?
The Blue Devils.
Ah.
Yes.
Right. I do like to bring it back to Atlanta when I can.
Mm-hmm.
The show doesn't always necessarily talk about Atlanta much
sure.
at all, but I do like to, so it's good to have that reference. And I, too, grew up in the burbs, so I know that life very well.
Yeah.
But it's also why I wouldn't live there now.
Yeah, it's funny because I have most of the most interesting things in my life have taken place downtown. I've worked different jobs down here. I worked at the Masquerade for a while.
Were you a bouncer?
Like 97, yeah. I did security. Well, everything. Anybody who knows the Masquerade, which maybe not everybody does, it's a nightclub downtown. Recently changed locations. I worked at the old location in 97, 98.
The real Masquerade.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Although I do like the new spot. But I got hired on as security, where you made minimum wage. Working security, you know, you may get stabbed, but here's your $4.65 an hour.
Probably got a lot of chicks, though, right?
No, man, I've never gotten a lot of chicks.
Really? You're big, dude.
I have no game whatsoever.
Really? Are you married?
Zero game. I am married.
Okay, good.
I got a 9-year-old son,
okay.
And that's the part of my life where I'm like, you know what, this is great.
Right.
But, no, I was never... I have most of my chick experiences are the kind where, like... You're driving along, you're having a perfectly normal day, and you've grown up going to your A job. And all of a sudden, your brain's like, you're pretty happy right now, right? You're listening to some good music in the car. Everything's cool. Hey, remember this? And like, it brings out some cringeworthy memory that makes you want to just drive into a fire hydrant.
Yes.
That's most of my chick experiences.
That's very real.
Hey, I am very real.
What is the best show you saw at the Masquerade?
Oh, man, that's a tough call. I mean, I've got to go with my favorite band, Faith No More. I got to sit on the stage and protect Roddy Bottom's keyboards for that.
Right.
But as far as just like, wow, that show was really something I didn't expect during the time that I was working there, Face to Face, oddly enough.
I don't even know who they are.
They're a punk band. And they were, I mean, they still tour and everything. Everybody still tours.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how old you get. It doesn't matter if you look like a lounge singer standing in front of the 20-year-old kids that have replaced the rest right. of your band. But they just put on this incredible, energetic show. And they're probably more, but
more,
I saw a lot.
More of the, when you say punk, we can go a few different ways. Like,
yeah, right.
Like original New York punk or more like that
no,
DC
this is West Coast.
Fast
no, West
thing?
Coast.
West Coast, got it.
Like melodic,
right?
Who's and Oz type punk,
right?
Yeah.
Can you hum a few bars from Faith No More's biggest hit? Because I don't think people.
You want it all, but you can't have it.
So my friend thought the next line was, you see the fish, but you can't have it, because the video had the flopping fish.
Right, right.
But that's not what he's saying.
Well, and even on Saturday Night Live, Mike Patton, when they performed on there,
he did say that?
Still have on VHS. No, no, no. But at the end of their set, he laid down on the stage
and did the fish.
Flopped around
right.
like the fish from the video.
That I do remember.
Yeah.
That I do remember. Okay, where were we? Oh, I was asking you what the best show you saw, and you said those are the two best shows.
Yeah, well, those are the two that spring to mind first. If I sat down and, like, actually wrote out a list, I'm sure I'd come up with some other stuff. I mean, I saw, you know, this is the late 90s, so this is the music that would stick with me for the rest of my life. Because
right.
I have a theory that, like, once you turn 30, 32, you stop really getting invested in new music.
Yep.
And so that was, like, that was the stuff, man.
Right.
So I was getting to see all of these huge, you know, rock acts. Because at the time, alternative music was it. So, I mean, that was a good time. I saw a lot of good bands.
Yeah, my Pandora is, like, 80s rap, 80s metal.
Yeah.
You know, Beastie Boys. Like, that's all. Like, I stopped. I can't, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
All
yeah.
I know now is whatever's on the pop radio, because I have kids, and that's what they listen to
yes.
on the way to school.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think the last, and again, if I sat and thought about it, maybe I'd have a different answer, but I think the last...
Okay, unfortunately, you guys didn't hear that, but somebody's very upset. We've never had anybody... We've had many people walk by. As I mentioned, usually we're on the back porch there.
Yeah.
And... But she's real mad, and that makes for good podcast. Yes. But unfortunately, you didn't hear. So, I totally lost where we were.
Let's see. We were talking about the Masquerade, and I think the last band that like hit that got me was probably System of a Down. Like, I think that's the last band that I discovered and was like, oh, I actually like these guys. These guys are really cool. I'm going to buy all their albums and
right.
keep up with them. And I don't know that there's been anyone after that.
Are they still around?
They broke up. I think they toured again maybe a year or two ago. I don't know. And again, see, even those guys, I haven't kept up. I don't know.
So you've been in the same A job like this whole time? Like this whole time you've been
since,
in Atlanta?
Since, no. I started this job in 2005. And this job is a career. Before that, I worked in retail in basically everywhere you can think of. Hot Topic, GameStop, Suncoast Video, if you remember that place.
Again, I'm shaking my head that you couldn't score at these stores.
Right?
I mean, at that age?
It's very sad.
You must really have...
It's,
like, a lot of guys say that because it's kind of cool
yeah,
to say
yeah,
you
yeah.
work with chicks.
No, no, there's
clearly
no
we're
cool,
not.
There's no
clearly
cool
Clearly we're not.
No, I'm not fronting.
Bouncer at the coolest... club
right
and working at those stores, you blew it, man.
Right. Oh, I totally did. No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I love it, man. That's awesome. That is awesome. I don't even know where to go from there because it's so hilarious.
So retail, just tons of retail, because, you know, back then we didn't have the internet, so retail wasn't dying a slow death. And you could, you know, if your boss pissed you off, you're like, okay, I quit. I'm going to go get another job right now and literally walk somewhere else
like
and be like,
to the next kiosk at the mall or whatever.
And everywhere I went, because I have a good presentation and I'm competent and my baseline is do a great job. Like that's my, I wouldn't necessarily say I've got a great work ethic. But compared to most people, apparently I have a great work ethic.
Right.
So I would end up being a manager everywhere I went, even if that wasn't my intention.
But isn't that fascinating that something as simple as this guy knows how to show up on time and do what we're asking him.
Let's give him keys.
Right.
Yeah.
At any age. I mean, that's the whole success of The Office is that guy, you know, the middle manager guy could rise to the top because people who are really, really smart don't stick around and the rest of the people stay in the lower end of the spectrum.
And that's exactly what it is.
Right.
I try not to think too much.
Because you're excited
about
getting the keys for about a week or two and then it's like, oh, fuck.
Right.
I got to be in charge of all these idiots. This is horrible.
Well, and that's the thing is once you become management, you really find out how dumb everyone else is.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because then above and below you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I did the retail thing for a good long while. Was content. I guess we'll get real again. I smoked a lot of weed.
Sure.
Lots of it. And, you know, at the time, thought it was great. And now I look back and I realize, like, I thought I was content and I wasn't. But I just smoked more weed until I was content again. So I did that for, you know, 10 or 12 years and just kind of did nothing. And that's one of the things where I look back and I think, man, if I just grabbed a microphone 10 years earlier, what would I be doing now? And I was like, well, there's no telling, but my wife and my son, chances are, wouldn't be in the picture. So,
right.
You know, I can't regret it. I can look back and sort of recognize it, but I can't regret it.
So when did you, quote unquote, grab the microphone?
It was how being a public person started was at the A job. At one point, they took the internet away, and we have nothing to do. I work 12-hour shifts, so I started writing, and I was inspired by a lot of the great pop culture websites that people may or may not know. There's one called xentertainment.com that's now Dinosaur Dracula and has the Purple Stuff podcast. There's another site called 16bit.com run by a guy named Adam Paulus. He writes about toys and pop culture and stuff. And I saw these websites and I was like, I love this. I do know that I'm good at writing and that I have a very specific voice. So let me start writing about stuff that I'm doing, stuff that I've done, about toy reviews. And part of this was my son had just been born. He was born in 2007. And I wanted to be able to share the experiences of my life with him because my parents didn't really do that with me. And I think that's part of the reason why I didn't pursue more things is I didn't really have a frame of reference for what you're supposed to do. Like aside from learn a business, work in that business. So I wanted to be sure that I had my memories down to share with my son. So I started writing about stuff that happened at the masquerade, just things that happened in my life, a record. It's funny. It's such a corny reference, but there's a movie with Michael Keaton. I think it's called My Life. It's where he's dying from cancer and he starts doing this record for his kid of his life. And I wasn't dying of cancer and hopefully won't be anytime. But it was kind of the same principle, like, man, I want to get this stuff down so I can make sure my son's more prepared than I was. And also so I can, you know, start a website and get some yucks out of it.
And so what was the name of your website?
It's needlessthingssite.com is the place, but it's Needless Things, which is totally a Stephen King reference.
Needful Things.
Right, exactly. But it's also kind of a double thing because it's Needless Things. Yes, it's a Stephen King reference, but I mostly write about like toys and pop culture and movies and TV shows and stuff like that that are it's fluff. It's needless. We don't need that stuff. We need food, shelter, water, and that's it. We don't need all that stuff, so it's needless. And also, those things don't need anything from you. Like they're just there. So there's a lot of I've I did not think about all of this when I made the name up. My first thought was just like, hey, that's catchy. I'll put that in Blogspot. But yeah, Needless Things was the website, and it's since Well, it wasn't the first, though. I don't know if you remember a thing called MySpace.
Of course.
I had a Phantom Troublemaker profile on MySpace, and the MySpace blog is actually where I started doing all of that.
Can I find that content somewhere?
Man, I don't know. I've before MySpace turned into whatever it is now. Yeah. I went in and copied a bunch of posts and tried to get as much of that stuff as I could because I did that for about a year before I actually started the website, and because I realized like this isn't a good medium at all. I need a dedicated site for what I'm doing. So I rescued some of it. Some of it's gone up as vintage posts, and a lot of it's still in a flash drive because I couldn't get any of the pictures off of there. So the content, I have it. And some way, shape, or form at some point, maybe Phantom Troublemaker's MySpace book coming soon to a Barnes & Noble near you. I don't know. But I've still got it.
And how soon did you start getting a lot of traction, a lot of comments? Were you sharing it in
I don't know
bulletin boards?
I don't know if I've ever gotten a lot of traction or comments. Here's the challenge for me as somebody who runs a website and a podcast and does a lot of media and does have to send emails in my phone. I'm not great with technology. It has been a fight every step of the way to learn new ways to use the medium. I'm not good at networking, probably goes back to the chick problem.
Have you graduated from Blogspot?
No.
No?
No.
Can I help you with that?
Oh, dude, I would love it.
So listen, I'm definitely what I would call a just enougher in that department.
Yeah.
I know just enough. And I have people that I can call to help me when I need it, which is, again, brings me back to the DragonCon site. Like, I know a few people. Those people have got to know 1,000 people.
Right.
That would, for a free entry into DragonCon, would make them the best website ever. Anyhow, I digress. So they've made it so super easy now that it even says, so WordPress, by the way, don't let anybody tell you any different, Wix or whatever, Squarespace, fuck that, WordPress, okay? And then it says, like, When you switch from the Blogspot, it says, "Are you switching to WordPress site? Great, give us these three things, magic, and it's done."
Does it just bring everything over?
Yes.
Oh, see, that's what I need. That's my big concern. Is yes. Like I can't lose all my existing.
Of course,
content.
Of course. Now this isn't,
I need to do it
right. This isn't 2004 where you had to get a new phone number, and they sat there with the two cords,
right? Transferring all the data.
And that's
right.
that technology's been available for a while.
Yeah.
This Blogspot to .com.
I
will happily help you do that.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it.
Okay, sure. So then how do people know you enough that you get to host cool shit at DragonCon?
Man, it's interesting.
If you're not getting a lot of traction anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, no, I've not. So my wife ran a comic book shop for about 15 years, worked DragonCon for about that long, and has a lot of people that she knows and that love her and whatever else. And we were at a local comic convention, the Atlanta Comic Convention. Next one's coming up on October 8th. And she's friends with a writer named Bobby Nash. And we were there, and she's like, oh, you should go talk to Bobby. And here's my networking problem. And I was like, what does writer Bobby Nash have to say to Dave West? Or at the time, Phantom Troublemaker. I'd already started doing the mask. And the whole thing with the mask, because that was you initially met me with the mask on, right?
Correct.
This is only recent that I've stopped wearing that for, like, everything that I'm doing. I had to keep my day job separate from this stuff. It was just a necessity at the time. So I was like, what does writer Bobby Nash have to, what does Phantom Troublemaker have to offer him? She's like, just go talk to him. Who cares? Whatever. And I'm very conscious of time and other people's time, because there's nothing more valuable than time. Not money, nothing.
Right.
Nothing. So I'm conscious of that. But I did go over and talk to Bobby Nash, and he was sitting with a guy named Mike Faber and another guy named Mike Gordon, and they're part of the ESO network, which is a local podcasting network. And I'll go ahead and blow my own horn here. They immediately recognized my talent and potential.
Good for them.
And within a few days, I was on their Doctor Who podcast. And that very night, they said, well, at the time, it was an episode of the regular podcast that was about Doctor Who. And then later that night, they sent me a message and said, hey, we're starting a dedicated Doctor Who podcast, and we'd like you to be the co-host. This is after one time on the show. And sure, at that point, I had been on one podcast in my life for my friend Noel's website. Dork Droppings. We'd done a WrestleMania episode, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it's talking into a microphone. And for this, for ESO, it was talking into a microphone about Doctor Who. And Doctor Who is one of my favorite. The shine has worn off a bit in recent years. I'm not a huge fan of what they've been doing the last few years, but it's one of my favorite nerd things, one of my favorite things of all time.
Did you meet the lady that was here?
I've met a number of people. This time around at Dragon Con, I was doing too much to meet anyone. I was super busy this year, but if you're talking about Karen Gillan, that was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't know what she's in.
she
was there, and she had a long line.
Yeah, that was probably her. I met her at Wizard World a couple of years ago, and got you got 0.75 seconds to get your picture with this person.
Right.
They have like the cattle line of cattle, right, just moving them through. So as far as like moderating the celebrity panels, this is a new thing. But getting in with those ESO guys is what got my foot in the door to a lot of things, because Mike Faber, the guy that runs it, is a good networker. That is his talent. He pushes his stuff. He talks to people. He meets everyone. He's the reason that I met Dan Carroll, and he got me on my first panel at Dragon Con in 2012.
And what was the subject matter?
1982.
That was the subject.
It was an anniversary panel, and we talked about all of the like science fiction.
Pac-Man and E.T.? What was big in 82?
Oh, E.T., man, I could talk about E.T. all day, because that's the scariest movie I've ever seen in my life.
I saw E.T. in the theater.
Me too. I'm
very proud of myself.
We went for, it was either my birthday or a friend of mine's birthday. And
that fucker holds up, by the way. Watch it with my kids.
I will not watch it, because it scared the shit out of me. My friend Preston, we walked out of the theater, and he immediately threw up in the lobby. We got back home, and I would not get out of the car until my dad went in the house to make sure there were no ETs in there.
Are you sure you're not talking about Poltergeist?
Oh, no, I'm talking about E.T.
Because Poltergeist scared the shit out of me.
Poltergeist did. Now, granted, I didn't see Poltergeist as young as I saw E.T., because right. I was in 1982, so I was six right, when I saw
10.
E.T.
I was 10 when I saw E.T.
And see, I was probably...
Was it the same year?
Poltergeist, 84, maybe?
I think
it was a little later.
But clowns and all that shit was like just freaked me the fuck out for a long time.
Yeah, you should have come to the evil clown panel at Dragon Con.
Well, I don't have one of those phobias that exists now.
Yeah.
But it definitely...
At the time?
Yeah. I should see that one. I should see if that holds up.
It does. Totally does. Don't see the remake, though.
Good old... Oh, please. I never see remakes of anything.
Well, some of them are good. Some of them have something to offer.
Name one.
Poltergeist doesn't.
Go ahead. Let's name one.
Oh, man. Texas Chainsaw remake.
Okay.
I dug it. They updated things. Let's see. What else? No, they're there.
It's okay.
My brain's just not functioning.
While you're thinking of that, let's talk about Star Wars for a minute.
Okay, let's do.
Okay, so I loved Rogue One.
Yeah?
And I was surprised that anybody didn't.
I get that for a lot of movies now, and I feel like they're... And I loved Rogue One as well. To me, it fit perfectly. Like, they got the aesthetic right.
Right.
We got to see... kind of the uglier side of the Rebel Alliance that we hadn't seen before. Like, before it was all hope and light, and they're the good guys. Yay! Right. This time we saw an assassin that worked for them.
Right.
It was tremendous. It was a little heavier, and it was a different, you know, people...
Well, certainly the darkest ending we've seen.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. People talk about Empire's dark ending.
Well, even
Empire's a sunny walk through a field.
Well, I mean, we didn't know Han was going to come back, so...
Right.
But I can't remember what I felt like at that age.
Yep.
But I know at the end of this one, I was like, awesome, perfect. Like, thank you for not doing the fucking Hollywood bullshit thing. Thank you for, like, I mean, obviously it's a very epic Hollywood ending, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Not an uplifting one, and there ain't going to be no sequel, right?
Right. Yeah, we're not going to see these people again.
Right.
Yeah, I was very, very happy with that movie.
Spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen Rogue One.
Right, exactly. Although, if you haven't, you may not be from this planet.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been sort of the beauty of having kids, is that you do get to experience this stuff again. You know, I do want to talk about wrestling, and through my son now, because Star Wars kind of never goes away, right?
Yeah.
Like, you all...
Well, it did. It did for a while.
Well, it did for a while, but you know, starting with the middle sucky three, which I'm sure you agree with me on.
Well, as a matter of fact, There are issues with the prequels, for sure.
Right, but the expectation level was so high, and they were so not we thought they were going to be.
Well,
the middle three.
I don't know anyone that walked out of The Phantom Menace and said that was a piece of shit. I don't know anybody.
But they look back now and say piece of shit.
They do, and to me, the only thing about that movie that's a piece of shit is Jar Jar Binks.
Right. Well, what was the first one that we saw? That was it, Phantom, or the other one was the first time with Darth Maul and the double.
That was Phantom Menace.
Because that was
bad.
That was bad to the ass.
Yes, we saw Jedi doing Jedi shit.
We were like, whoa.
Yes.
But what was the one with the cartoonish Yoda bopping around?
Oh no! See, I loved that too. That was Attack of the Clones.
I mean, it's funny. But it's a little, like, looking back, it's kind of a little silly.
No, see, I still love it. Just because it's Yoda. Like, when you watch Empire and you see Yoda, and he's supposed to be, like, the greatest Jedi Master of all time or whatever, and you're like, he's a fat Kermit the Frog. Are you kidding me?
Essentially. But again, watching that with my kids, I was like, this is Yoda, right?
Yeah.
He's poking him with a stick, and he's making fun of him, and he's watching old Luke trip over things.
But to our kids, the bouncing around guy is Yoda.
Okay.
Because they have, and this is a whole podcast unto itself, but each succeeding generation, there's a generation of kids that the prequels are their Star Wars.
We could find those kids.
There's a generation of kids that Clone Wars is their Star Wars.
Right.
There's, you know, and that's the great thing about Star Wars coming back with the special editions in 97 is that with each generation, you know, we get older and we look at the new stuff and we're like, huh, this isn't quite the same.
Okay. Which is the one where, again, you can see how good I am at this stuff. The one where, which is why I have guys like you on, right? I need experts.
Right.
Where the really bad Darth Vader, the Hayden Christensen.
That's Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
And
so I did walk out of that and go, this sucks. Let me tell you something. I watched that movie. And about an hour into it, it was like, I've only got to stick this out because I've got to see him become Darth Vader. Literally. And I stuck through it, and I stuck through it. And, like, finally, he's catching fire. And I'm like, thank God. Because that's the whole reason I'm watching this movie.
Right.
I did walk out of that and say it sucked.
Yeah.
I will say that.
And I know people that did.
Hand on the, whatever the Star Wars Bible
right,
is.
Right, right.
Is there a Star Wars Bible?
Jedi Holocron, probably.
Yeah, my hand on the Jedi Holocron.
Yeah.
I would say that.
That one, I'll admit, didn't satisfy me as much as I wanted. Because the ending was a big pile of shit. The no, and then with Padme she just decided to die, like that was horseshit. There was other stuff in that movie.
I thought it was Padma.
Padme.
Okay. No, you just taught me something. Okay, so yeah, I was saying that through their eyes, like watching it with them. And then you get a whole new experience, right?
Because, oh, yes.
I mean, like, when I – so this is – and I may have told the story in this podcast before, but I don't care. So I met Charles Robinson. Did I tell you that? Do you know who he is?
You're talking about the referee?
Yes.
Yes.
Who also was at one point called Little Nate because he hung out with the Nature Boy. So I got to meet him through my A job, which is obstacle racing.
Okay.
Right? And I have a podcaster on that and blah, blah, blah. So he's a big obstacle racing guy. He said, you know, would you like some wrestling tickets? And I said, sure, I'll bring my son.
Oh, very
and my cool. son had never seen an episode of anything.
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't watched anything since, I want to say WrestleMania 3, but I'm sure I'd seen some afterwards, but that's my fun memory, which we can get into.
Yeah.
And I know you know which one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I bring him, and he instantly cheers for the good guys and boos the bad guys. And I was so, like, stoked. I was like, this shit is magic. He didn't need to know who was who.
Right.
And he was doing the cheers and the chants. And then I could cry saying this, like to watch him light up, like, oh, you know what I mean? To watch him have those reactions. And then it brought me back into it. And now we watch Monday night and Tuesday nights together. Not together, usually the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're TiVo'd or whatever.
Yeah. Everything's DVR. Nobody watches anything in real time.
Right. And, you know, at first, I was like, oh, man, I'm not going to know anything. But thankfully, you know.
You get right back into it.
You get right back into it. Now they even show, here's what happened last week. Here's what happened at SummerSlam if you missed it.
Here's what happened 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're caught up with the stories. You kind of know the lay of the land. And I'm a gigantic wrestling fan all over again.
That's great. That's great. And that's wrestling, like with Star Wars, is something where it's kind of rolling into the new generations. And if you're somebody who has been watching it the whole time for the last 30 years or whatever the case may be, you may find yourself sort of wondering, like, wow, when did this change? Why is this different? What's happening now? And it's because they're aiming at a younger demographic. I had a similar experience to you. My son, now granted, one of the first pictures of my son is him with a replica wrestling belt on his tiny little infant body. Aww. In the hospital.
Nice.
And he just really doesn't care that much about wrestling.
Aww.
No, it's fine. I'm not that guy that's going to put my kid in a cane costume.
No, of course not.
Of course not. Put a picture up on Instagram.
Dude, of course.
But if we're into the same things, then we are. And if we're not, we're not.
Dude, my son does not want to run with me ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I run, you know, not every day, but five times a week.
Yeah.
And when he was little, he would kind of do it. But now it's like, come on, buddy, let's go run. Like, never.
Yeah.
And I know parents that, like, force them to.
Yeah. And see, I'm not in. Because I was forced into every single sport there was. Aww. I hated all of it. It didn't build any character. It just made me miserable.
Right.
So I don't want to do that. You know, we're very much into, like, let's find what you're interested in and we'll do that. So he loves Star Wars. He loves superheroes. You know, we've got tons of stuff that we do share interest in. But my friend and I were going to go see NXT, WWE's kind of training
minor
ground.
League.
Yeah, minor league, although it's really its own thing now. But anyway, a friend of mine and I were going to go see NXT in Atlanta, and my friend ended up not being able to go. So that's tremendous. My friend ended up not being able to go, and I brought my son because I figured, you know, it's live. Live wrestling is a thing unto itself.
Absolutely.
And even though, like, every once
religious
in a while,
experience,
yeah, and
which Dragon Con was for me, I want to talk to you about
in
a minute.
Absolutely, you know, he's got wrestlers he likes and knows. He likes Bayley, he likes John Cena, he loves Rey Mysterio. So I mean, he's familiar with it. He just doesn't follow it. But we went to see NXT, and man, he was into it the whole time. He got into all, you know, they make it so accessible where, you know, the talent knows how to get people going. Like, that's the art of wrestling, is getting the crowd, and a 9-year-old kid is primed and ready to be gotten. So, you know, Ty Dillinger comes out and is doing his 10 thing, and my son's just standing up going 10 10 10, and like you said, it I got a little misty, just like, man, he loves this, he's so into this right now, and this is a moment, this is something both of us are going to remember and share.
Dude, I can't remember the first one, but I just, you know, I was doing the Instagram stories, and I watched his face when someone got, you know, slammed or whatever.
Yeah.
But here's the couple things that I wanna say about wrestling. So through Charles, we got to go backstage and meet some of the guys, right? And gals, as it were. So every one of them, like, to a man and woman, took that second to make my kid feel special.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like any of them were kind of like sort of going through the motions. Cena a little bit, but I give the guy some credit. The guy's, you know,
that guy's a workhorse, man.
Well, and he's that Hogan like recognized around the world status. So
yeah.
I'll give him but everybody else, hey, Charles would introduce him, they'd shake my hand, they'd look me in the eye, I'd say, this is my son, they'd, you know, get down, they'd talk to him, they'd make a joke, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just all of them to a man or woman, right, did that. And my son's like, dude, I got to introduce my kid to Cena, please. I'm dad of the century, right?
Yeah.
So you meet them backstage, and first of all, you kind of think, oh, wow, they don't look that big, right? Like, they're like sort of regular people. But then it made the magic of the ring even more, because the lights come on, the music plays. They don't look that different, but all of a sudden, they're larger than fucking life. They
absolutely
turn it on.
Yeah.
So we got some seats to the Phillips a couple times, but then they were down in Columbus, and Charles said, hey, you could probably meet some of the guys. It's kind of a smaller venue.
See, and those house shows, those are the ones.
So, dude.
Yeah.
So we go down there. That's where we got to meet people, and now we're front row. And I'm telling you, you want to talk about a religious experience. Like, whatever part of you that it's buried in your brain somewhere that like they're not really trying to hurt each other, it doesn't matter. You yeah. might see in a 3-hour show, you might see two hits that look a little phony.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything else is like, bam, bam. They're literally in your face. Yeah. They come over the top rope and like land on you.
Yeah.
I mean, how fucking awesome is that? I'm guessing you've been up front.
I've been up front. I've been I've actually done ring announcing.
Oh, that's awesome.
I've worked in not for WWE or anything,
right.
but I've worked for a few local companies. Matter of fact, for several years, I was the announcer for something called Monstrosity Championship Wrestling, which is where they took indie guys, independent wrestlers from Southeast. And a guy named Shane Morton, who's a local, he runs Haunts. He does everything. He works on Your Pretty Faces Going to Hell for Adult Swim. Shane would paint them up to look like monsters.
Oh, wow.
We had a Carolina reptile, lizard man. We had a wolf man. It was great. We would have bands play. We'd have wrestling matches. It was
Dude,
amazing.
Why is this not around anymore? Just didn't make the money that he thought.
That's not for me to discuss.
Okay.
But it was an amazing time, but just being in the middle of that is there's nothing like it. Because imagine it's awesome enough being at a live wrestling event where you are right up front and where they're getting thrown into the guardrail right in front of you and you're getting to yell profanity at the bad guys. One time we were at a WWE show and I was sitting in the front row for that one and Ric Flair got thrown into the barricade right beside us. And I dropped some choice anti-Ric Flair words on him because he was a bad guy at the time. Something like, get the fuck out of here, old man. Go backstage. You suck. Whatever it was. And he turned around and yelled, stuck his finger in my face and said, motherfucker, I'll fuck your wife all night long. Sweated all over me and then ran off.
That's awesome.
But the great thing is I got a picture of him while he was yelling at me. So I've got this picture, like old school picture, that you know, like printed out photograph. Of Flair, like bulging, sweating.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. But imagine that, except it's the Wolfman.
Right.
It was great. It was a lot of fun.
So where can people see? Because that's after being blown away by DragonCon, which we can talk about in a second. I was like, where else can I see this shit? And it all seems like to be like North Georgia or in the Carolinas.
Yeah,
there's not like any like city wrestling.
No, there's not. Which
can we
is
start
insane
one?
To me.
Can we start one?
I would never, ever do it because I've seen what it's like to try and run an independent wrestling promotion, and it's a nightmare.
Right.
Hurt people say herding cats. I would rather herd cats than herd wrestlers. No. I love them. They're awesome people, and they will give you 100% of their being. But booking a wrestling show is a nightmare. But there should be wrestling down here. I don't know why there's not. And there was. MCW ran downtown. We ran in Platinum Championship Wrestling, which is they're still going on, but they're up in Porterdale, Georgia now. They used to run in the Masquerade, man. Those were some of the best wrestling
shows
ever. Just
thinking off the top of my head, now you could easily do some Facebook Live stuff. You could do some kind of easily pay-per-view version of it. Like,
yeah.
You could, like, the technology is so easy now.
The problem is that somebody who is going to successfully book a wrestling promotion, in all likelihood, doesn't have the skills to do those things.
And
somebody that has the skills to do those things does not have the skills to deal with wrestlers.
Well, that's where, like, hypothetically, like a you or I could come in together, right?
But it is a hard business. It is a business based a lot on trust and unfortunately a business where a lot of people are not trustworthy. I mean, it's still very much a carny thing. There's insiders, there's outsiders.
Got it.
If they perceive that you're not one of them, then you're going to get taken advantage of at every turn. It's rough. It's a tough call. Like, running any kind of business on your own is tough. It will consume your life.
Right.
But running a wrestling business, you've got to have a very specific set of talents.
It's very interesting. People ask me that about, like, you know, I'm in this obstacle race in the world. They're like, oh, would you ever want to put on a race? And it's like, not a chance.
You're right.
Because I know.
Too many moving parts. So much.
So many moving parts. I mean, and for me, it's just like I'd be then competing with people that I asked to advertise with me, et cetera.
Yeah.
Somebody's dog just rolled up.
Oh, my gosh. There's a pug here. Hello, pug. Oh, my gosh. Look at you. That's fine. I don't care because he's a snorty little pug. I will interrupt any podcast
to talk to dogs
for some pug time.
Aww.
Hello, pug. All right, you got to go now. But it was a lovely meeting you.
So
goodbye, pug.
So now comes the Dragon Con show,
yes,
which was my first Dragon Con experience at all ever.
Okay,
it was the Thursday night. I met I met Dan, and I was like, hey, can I get tickets to the show this year? And he was like, sure. After I had him on to do media, and I had no idea. Like, I just knew nothing. So there was this really long line going into the show, and I was like, okay, I don't want to stand in that. So I found my way where the wrestlers were going in, and I was like, okay, like, I'm a media guy. I can, like,
if you walk with purpose,
absolutely,
nobody stops you.
Absolutely. So I walked with purpose, which isn't as easy when you're with a little boy too, because he doesn't quite know how to walk with purpose.
Right. Yeah.
And I just started seeing all these guys and gals, and I instantly wanted to interview all of them. And I was like, well, I should let them wrestle first, and I'll kind of see like what they do and whatever. And I don't know; they don't really know me. And then that was a big fail because most of them did not stick around all night.
Yeah,
a lot of them like got back to wherever the hell they were from.
Well, that since Dragon Con Wrestling moved to Thursday nights, it's a little different because it used to be on Fridays.
Right.
But now, the boys have to work the next day.
Right.
So some of them have to bug out. Some of them want to go party. So it clears out a little faster than it used to.
Okay. So before they would stay for the con, you mean?
Oh, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, but here's the part that amazed me is I thought, okay, when I go see a WWE production, mm-hmm. right? It's 40 years of history.
Yeah.
It's millions of dollars in production and marketing and everything else in the world. Like, we'll see what happens. And then sure enough, I have almost the exact same experience with that, with that reason people say they love watching amateur sports. I don't want to say college football because that's a fucking pro sport, but they're not millionaires. They're doing it for the love of it. So here you're seeing that. And once again, 2 out of every 100 hits maybe look, but the rest, I'm like, these guys are, I don't want to say just as good,
and in many cases they are.
They're fucking John from shipping.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like a regular dude. And then I couldn't wait to talk to them and I couldn't find most of them and they'd gone. But I guess then what is the difference? Because they clearly, that's what they would want to be if they had a choice.
Mm.
But I'm telling you, those of you who are listening that are wrestling fans, get down to that show because I was not disappointed. And now you are front row. Everybody's pretty much front row.
I would say that Dragon Con Wrestling is the best indie show that you can go to as far as entertainment value because it's not centered around any storylines. They're going out there to have fun. They're going out there to make sure everybody in attendance is having fun. It's a little bit of a different animal, but I would say if you can go to any indie show, you're going to get that same flavor. Those guys, I would almost say they work harder than a lot of the WWE guys because they are only doing it because they love it. That's why they're there. They're not paying their electric bill by wrestling. Whereas in WWE, those guys they're called contract employees, which is utter bullshit, but that's their job. They're getting paid.
Why is it utter
bullshit? Do their job. Because they're not contracted employees. They can't go work other places.
They're slaves.
They can't. Yeah, they are. They are. It's ridiculous, but that's a whole other thing. But you've got people in WWE who are very comfortable. They work at a certain level, and that's what they do because they're getting a regular paycheck. These independent guys, they go out there every single night busting their ass because that could be the night that makes them. That could be the night where, they find their new signature thing. That could be the night where the right guy is in the audience to say, hey, I happen to be friends with whoever's doing talent relations in WWE now. You need to talk to him. And they just love doing it each and every night, and they're not making jack shit doing it.
Dude, when Manchild body slammed...
Oh, my gosh, I love that guy.
When Manchild body slammed, I think it was 10 people in a row.
Yeah.
And then he body slammed himself.
Yes.
I mean...
Every year, he gets one of the most memorable spots of the whole show. That guy is tremendous, and it's so funny to talk to. Because when you were talking about seeing him backstage and they're a little more subdued, that guy, you see him backstage, he's like, hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, my God. I went up to him and told him how much I loved it. And I said, and my kid loved it. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, this character is for kids. Like,
yeah,
like that's
absolutely,
I'm a big goofy wearing, I mean, I don't know what he normally dresses up as, but he was wearing this crazy blue.
He
looked like a giant grimace basically.
Yeah. He's usually in some kind of really bright colors. Very, you know, he's a huge, giant, tall guy anyway,
right.
But, he's always in bright colors. He's always just sort of fun, but he goes out there and he's almost like some kind of giant kaiju just stomping around and throwing people around. But
right.
Yeah. Backstage, he's like, hey, what's going on, man? You get a mint?
And there were so many of those moments. And again, you know that they're not like these 10-year storylines. These are all kind of just happening.
Yeah.
And I was so just like stoked to be there. And then like, if you go to a, you know, wrestling, if you watch WWE, like there's a lot of great, you know, they have their own anthems, they have their own chants. So here, I was sitting with the hooligans.
Were you with the hooligans?
And they're just like, it's just where I sat, but I had no idea I was in the best seat of the house.
Yeah.
Who made up the best chants like I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. I was like, this is unbelievable. And like, some of them were cursing and they'd like apologize to my kid. I'm like, it doesn't matter, because he would get into it.
Yeah.
Right? So good.
Yeah, that's where I came from, actually. My buddies, Ryan and Pete, had been going to the wrestling for years. And as much as I love wrestling, it just wasn't something I necessarily was going to do at Dragon Con. It would be like going and watching a movie at Dragon Con. Like,
right.
There's so much other shit to do. But I went one year and I sat with him and I was like, this is phenomenal. And then from Jonathan Williams, who's a local writer, runs WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, he has ends. He's another one of those network guys. Like, he's good at it, at networking. And one year he was like, hey, you want me to ask AJ if you can do something? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll run out and do something. And I ended up being the commentator for the whole night. Basically, I think that year I basically was just flying solo.
This year they had like three guys.
Yeah, this year was a whole other thing. But yeah, it's just being part of that is just amazing, because it's the, like, if I had to choose between going to WrestleMania and going to Dragon Con Wrestling, I'd go to Dragon Con Wrestling.
Well, I would say that's almost heresy to some people, because,
oh, I'm sure,
because when I talk about how much I love wrestling, people go, you haven't been to WrestleMania yet, you have to go to WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then your life will be changed.
Yeah.
And you would really choose DCW over?
Absolutely. Now, I will say this, though. I will make this, if I would get the same treatment at WrestleMania that I have experienced at DCW for the last 3-4 years, however long it's been, then I would probably have to go to WrestleMania. But if we're talking about just, you know, me as a dude buying my ticket going to WrestleMania, I'd pick DCW every single time.
So when you did your panel with Ricky the Dragon, Seaboat, and Kane,
mm-hmm.
Were you nervous?
No, I don't. It's funny. I get that question a lot about getting nervous before, because I've hosted rock and roll shows. I've hosted wrestling. I've done basically anything where I can grab a microphone. And people do always ask me, do you get nervous? And I the only thing that makes me nervous is driving in downtown Atlanta. But as far as getting on a mic, I don't, because, and this is only because of age, I think, and experience, but I feel like I'm very good at feeling out crowds. I'm very good at feeling out people. I honestly think, and granted, someday I'll bomb. There have been times where maybe things have been a little rougher. There were definitely MCW shows where the audience wasn't as receptive as I expected, and I kind of had to adjust what I was doing on the fly. Because those shows, like, I was a host. I wasn't an announcer. I would go out there, and I'd have to do patter and talk and, like, keep things going sometime for several minutes at a time, as opposed to just saying, on his way to the ring is the reptile guy.
Right.
Like, it would be a different kind of thing. But I guess I'm just confident in my abilities. So, like, I knew I could go out there and talk to Kane and Ricky Steamboat, and if one of them wasn't as, you know, talky, I'd go to the other one. If they weren't responding to what I was doing, then it's time for crowd Q&A. Then it's, like, I'm good at that. So I feel good about it. And I get excited, but it's not the same as nervous, I don't think.
Well, cool, man. Let's get to the we're gonna get to the Atlanta quiz, which I've messed around with.
Oh man,
which I've messed around with.
You just made me nervous.
Well, it's your opinion. It's not.
Oh, okay.
It's not that kind of quiz.
Well, I can talk my opinion.
It's not when did Ted Turner found TNT?
Oh shit.
Or TBS. But it's again a good way to sometimes we talk about Atlanta lots of times a little, but if we haven't at all, like in this episode, we'll wrap it up. So, question number one: are you a Waffle House fan?
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of a specific plate there, but overall...
Well, that's question two. Your favorite plate?
I don't go out of my way to go to Waffle House, but I won't avoid it.
Okay. What is your... That's new. Most people are big fans on this show.
Yeah.
But what is your dish at Waffle House?
My dish is chopped steak melt plate, double order of hash browns, scattered and covered.
But see, isn't that great? Even though you're not a fan, you know your exact plate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, now here's the thing. Waffle House, and I don't want to throw the quiz off too much, but just real quick, after high school, me and my friends would hang out at Waffle House. That was the hangout spot.
Smoke cigarettes?
Oh, yeah. Smoke cigarettes, drink. I didn't drink coffee. I drank tea. I've never been a huge fan of coffee. But, yeah, we would just sit in there. I don't know how they tolerated us. It was ridiculous.
I think that's why you didn't work well with the chicks.
That might have been it.
The tea.
Waffle House was not the...
No, the tea.
The tea's a turnoff?
Not very manly.
That could have been it. You're right. That could have been it.
All right. What is your favorite Waffle House? What is your favorite Waffle House? It is my favorite restaurant. What's your favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
My favorite restaurant in Atlanta. Oh, man.
Or you can give me one or two.
I mean, Fellini's is kind of the classic just because it goes so far back and it's kind of a place that everybody knows. I recently ate. You know what? Flatiron. I'm going to go with Flatiron.
Okay.
Which is, granted, it's more of a bar, but the food there is really good. I love the atmosphere there. I got friends in East Atlanta, so if I'm downtown, that's a place I'll make an effort. Is it reasonable to get over there? Yeah, let's go.
What part of town are you in now?
I'm out in the suburbs now.
In Smyrna?
Yeah, no, I'm not in Smyrna.
Where are you?
I'm out in the suburbs.
You're not going to say where?
No.
I'm not going to ask your street, bro. Okay, that's fine.
Well, if you head towards Lawrenceville, you'll hit it eventually.
Okay. dude, I have a weird cold thing happening. Well, at least you gave me your real name. I've had people come on the show that only gave me their...
Well, this only recently happened at Dragon Con.
I had a burlesque woman on, and she gave me her burlesque name, and that was it.
If we had done this interview prior to Dragon Con,
you would have just been Phantom Troublemaker.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but I took the mask off. But and part of the reason was I was moderating the guest panels, and that's about them. It's not about my goofy gimmick.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to be Dave West, and I came out.
Right. You also have a good radio name too.
Dave, yeah, it's easy to remember. It's,
right. So one of my questions is about where your favorite show, the best show you've seen, and or your favorite venue. Do you have another favorite venue other than Masquerade?
Oh, holy shit. I mean, the Masquerade will always be my favorite venue, but, I'm trying to remember the place. It was on Buford Highway. Ballroom. Shit, what was it called? International Ballroom.
I was going to say Imperial Ballroom.
International Ballroom.
Is that the same place the Sex Pistols first played, or that was something else?
I don't know, honestly. It's out on Buford Highway.
Sweating.
And honestly, at this point, I couldn't even tell you exactly where it was, but that place was a little scary.
Right.
In a way that even the Masquerade wasn't.
I want to say I've seen shows there. Like, I think I saw the Beasties there, maybe.
I saw Anthrax there. I saw White Zombie there. It was a great, great metal venue.
Right. All right. Rank these in order.
Oh, boy.
Okay. I think I can guess the answer, but rank these in order. Braves, Falcons, United.
Okay. I'm going to go number one, United. Number two, Falcons. Number three, Braves. But I have to qualify that. I have zero interest in sports.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. But yet you still said the soccer team first.
Yeah. And I only say that because, one, and this may not be popular with some listeners, I loathe baseball. Out of all the sports I played when I was a kid, that was the one that I just hated the most. I can't watch baseball. I can't, even if my pals are like, hey, we're going to a baseball game to drink. I'm like, no, I wouldn't go for free. I wouldn't go if you were like, I'm going to take you backstage and introduce you to every single one of the Braves. I don't care. I don't give a shit. Football, I can tolerate, but I don't. I mean, I don't watch it. Soccer, however, as much as the sport itself is whatever it is, if you go to a soccer game, and are there to get into it, you're going to have a good time. Now, yeah, you can't go by yourself, but like if you go with a group of people to a soccer game, you're going to have a good time.
I've got a big anti-United thing going on right now.
Yeah?
I think it represents everything hipster and douchey about Atlanta. I'm willing to be proved wrong. I've spoken about it online. I've spoken about this podcast.
Interesting.
I'm willing to go. I actually contacted the guy who runs a popular anti-United podcast to take me to a game.
Yeah.
He said he was going to, and then he didn't, whatever. But I want to go and experience it because I'm pro football all the way.
Well, to be fair, I have not been to a United game. I used to go. There was a team years ago. I can't even remember.
The Silverbacks?
Silverbacks, yes.
Right.
And we would go and we would have fun and we would pretend we were British people yelling and stuff. You know, that was the fun of it. But I don't think you're wrong about the hipster douchebag thing, because even back then, you know, the people I was hanging around with, I didn't really give a shit about soccer.
Yeah, I think a bigger word, by the way, before I get angry emails, which I'm okay with, is bandwagon. I think that's the best.
Sure, for sure. You're right.
Right.
Well, but that I mean, you can put all the hipster douchebags in a bandwagon because that's exactly what's going on. I'll say that. You don't have to say
that. Would you start a band with me called Hipster Douchebag Bandwagon?
For sure.
Up top.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, I feel like you and I could talk a lot more.
I think you're right. But we can't. Nobody wants to listen to this for 4 hours.
Well, they might. but I like to keep it around an hour. So first of all, I want to acknowledge. So my friend Cole has a Kansas City podcast.
Okay.
So I want to give him a shout out because he's hilarious and awesome. And even if you don't, like, I'm not from Kansas City, but I enjoy it. And I always thought about this idea of, I'm going to think of a quicker way to explain this because I'm not going to do it every episode. Just give him a shout out because he does a quiz. He actually gives points. I don't give points. But it's like it's a fun Atlanta thing to do. So
yeah.
There's your shout out, Cole. where can people find more about you?
People can find me at needlessthingssite.com where myself and my writers post. It used to be 5 days a week. Now we've kind of cut back a little bit because my bread and butter, so to speak, even though it's not the traditional meaning of that at all, is the podcast, the Needless Things podcast. Episode 179 goes up this Friday. We post a new episode each and every Friday. And the last episode, we did a commentary on the 1995 Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. And then this week is going to be one of my panels from Dragon Con with Tim Clark, who worked for the Jim Henson Company and worked on the Dark Crystal and Fraggle Rock and created the Boglins and Sektars toy lines.
What would it take to be a guest on your program?
Sending me an email and saying, hey, Dave, I'd like to be a guest on your program, and I do a thing that I can talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll talk to anyone, man.
Because certainly I can't go full nerd on like a subject you just mentioned, but like you talk about like 1982 or 80s movies or like that kind of thing, and I'm like all in.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I love talking to people. I love hearing about people's life experiences. As a matter of fact, when we do pop culture stuff, I'm much more interested in somebody's personal recollections. I don't want anybody to sit down and be like, well, I just looked at Wikipedia, and according to this, in 1982, this happened. That's not interesting to me. What's interesting to me is, like, when did you find this thing? What was your reaction to it? How did it affect your life? Like, that's what I like, and that's talking to people. You know, that's getting to know people. So, yeah, anybody that, you know, I'd love to have you on, man, absolutely. And but anybody listening, if you do something, if you create something, shoot an email to phantomtroublemaker@gmail.com and we'll hook it up. Or hit me up on Facebook, L Phantasmus with a PH. I haven't switched over to Dave West yet, and Facebook will not let me call myself Phantom Troublemaker on there.
Well, I like to say that if I remember, I'll put those in the show notes. I remember about 50% of the time.
Yeah, believe me, I understand.
And nobody reads show notes.
No, they don't. You know, it's all on iTunes. It's all just like the even the little paragraph that comes up or the sentence or whatever. It's just click on the picture. I try to do as much as I can. Yeah, on Instagram, actually, Phantom Troublemaker on Instagram. Instagram is it, man. That is the spot because it's all pictures. You got to figure out, even more so than Twitter with its 120 characters or whatever, which I don't understand. Instagram, you got to figure out how to get it all in a picture. I think that's the best.
All right, we're getting into a whole.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, we'll talk more.
Yeah, man.
All right, peace out, bro. Alrighty, there we go. There we go. Phantom Troublemaker.
Quick side note, if you want to go to the other podcast I have, the Observatory Media Podcast, if you've seen a movie called Barkley, The Race That Eats Its Young, the documentary about this amazing race called the Barkley, I went there with Jackson, my son, a couple of weekends ago, and I'm getting more feedback on that episode than I get about most, a lot of positive feedback. People seem to enjoy the vibe of it and kind of what I caught there, the magic of Barkley, if you will. So you don't have to be a fan of obstacle racing or a fan of running in particular, but some people, even if they're not fans, they're like, when I tell them what I do, they're like, oh yeah, have you seen that documentary about that crazy race? Anyway, go check that one out. It's the recent episodes, especially part one, but there's parts one and two. Probably part three will be up by the time you hear this, maybe. Anyway, go and enjoy. Thanks for listening. Patreon coming soon. Love you, miss you, mean it. I've got to run.
The Jeep Wrangler 4xe. It's electrified. Boogie, woogie, woogie. So you can boogie, woogie, woogie up a mountain, boogie. Over creeks, or boogie, woogie, woogie through a desert, where you get bit by a pit viper. So you boogie, woogie, woogie back to camp and ask your friends if they'll suck the snake venom out. When they say no, you boogie, woogie, woogie to the nearest hospital for a dose of antivenom. And boogie, woogie, woogie your way.